Welcome to the Gaslit Podcast, and thank you very much indeed for listening, guys. This is episode 51, which is one more week to go until our first birthday here at the podcast. And about 99% of podcasts never make it this far. So I'm super excited we pushed on with it. I said at the beginning, I'm going to carry on with the podcast and we're going to be answering listeners' questions. And those bits and pieces and helping the DIYers and the new people coming into the industry as well. And personally for me as well, I've grown a lot from explaining stuff and getting stuff over from where I was until I am now. So it's actually helping me personally, as well as I'll giving you a bit of information as well, and hopefully helping some people out there as well with their journey within the plumbing industry. But first of all, before we get into the topics, I'm going to tell my friend Sean here to tell you a bit about why we do the podcast. Thank you for listening to another Gaslit Podcast, the show to help DIYers, new people into the industry, and those who are wanting to expand their knowledge. Each week we'll pick a topic and go into details, and with special guests and listeners' questions answered, we will look forward to some of the conversations. So let's get back to the show. Right there, guys. So what we've been up to last week, obviously we just had the bank holiday weekend. I'm recording this on Tuesday the 22nd at 10 past 5 in the morning. So I was busy all weekend doing some fun stuff. And I got back off I've been away with my wife on holiday. And we got on a cruise from Croatia from Malta. I got on a cruise ship at Malta and then done Croatia. Three stops in Croatia and then come back again. We landed Thursday evening. There's some stuff that I put up on social media that's open for everyone to have a look at, some pictures and stuff. So I got done to that. So the business is obviously, I've not really been in the business. So I've been looking at, as I do, you know, I can't sort of step away completely from everything that's going on. A bit of a problem maybe that I've got, I don't know. But just sort of, yeah, being there in contact for the team and seeing what's going on and, yeah, giving a little bit of help and support where I can, where I would normally be if I was at work, but doing my best remotely from a cruise ship or from a different country. So we had, I've got a couple of facts and figures about the cruise ship from a plumbing point of view, which is quite interesting. I've done a little tour of the ship. But first of all, I just want to go on to a couple of things about some plumbing stuff that did come in from last week. And it's not the first time we've come across this stuff. So if you're having water mains works done and they're digging up the street in your, the road in your street, sorry, and your neighbouring roads. Now, if we've got some old water mains that are being replaced, so these are like old cast iron, they're being replaced for like the blue plastic. And you'll see like the water vans that are parked up rather than the gas vans or the utility vans when they're actually doing the road works. If we then start to see that, we need to start being a bit mindful because we've got in the toilets, and this is the biggest, probably the call that we get, is that there's a tiny little hole that fills up the toilet system after you flush it. Now, that is about the size of a pinprick, and the water comes through slowly. That's why your water system doesn't fill up in half a second or a second really rapidly and goes bang and the valve turns off. It fills up slowly and then the ball valve or the float valve turns the water off. That's why the toilets work as they work. So when we get this problems where if we're dislodging any bits of dirt in the water system, it'll come through. Typically, what's happened is you flush the toilet, you've got no water. All of a sudden, it's not filling up at all. You go to the kitchen tap, it doesn't work. Now, what the issue then is that when the water does come back on, the first thing to start filling with the water to go through will be the toilet. And that's the worst place that first bit of dirty water should go to. Really, we want to open up like an outside tap. If we open up the outside tap, any bits of debris that are in the pipe, because the outside tap is a very basic tap, it'll open up nice and wide and any of those bits will get flushed straight out and there's a lot less chance of it going up and affecting your toilet fill. And what will actually happen is your toilet won't fill. So it'll drip and it'll take absolutely forever because a microscopic part, you know, just the tiniest of flakes, the size of a pinhead, has made its way through and then got to the outlet of the valve. And now it's not filling at all. And then that's when we start getting problems and callbacks on stuff there. And you can get that if you've got some old iron pipes in your house and you turn your water meter, your stopcock off in your house, you're dislodging that old bit of steel pipe there and it's full of rust inside and you get the little bits of flake that start moving and coming through. So just be mindful of that. If you do any, if you've got any of that stuff going on, open up, even if it's just your kitchen tap, get that open nice and wide and then flush a few litres through. And that could save you the problem and the heartache and the headache of toilets that don't fill. And of course, if they don't fill up, the easiest way to flush a toilet is with a bucket. Because that's all it is. You've got 6 litres of water typically inside your water system. Fill up a bucket and then just tip it down the pan. Most people have got a bath or a shower in the same area as the toilet and then just fill it up and then just have it on standby on the side and just manually flush it until you get it sorted. We've gone to a lot of jobs where people are, you know, using the toilet through necessity. And you turn up and it's like, well, all you had to do was just tip a bucket of water down there, and that could have saved you all this smell and heartache and embarrassment. But yeah, so that's a really, really simple little tip there for flushing that through. Washing machine smell. So this actually comes from a call that we had about a smell in a kitchen, and it was smelling. So typically, if it smells of cabbage, that sort of vegetable stuff, then that's generally drain smell. So things that are moving in drains don't tend to smell that much. But yeah, for me personally, if it smells of cabbage, it's on the poo side. If it smells of poo, then it's normally soap. So we're getting smells of, I can smell like foul waste, like poo smells. And the first thing for me is like, let's have a look at the washing machine. Let's have a look at the dishwasher. We've got too much soap that's been put in. And when we've got all these new fancy pod ideas, where we're getting this fixed amount of detergent that's being put in for whatever the load of washing is, then it doesn't all get used up. We're getting too much soap that's being put into the system. And then it goes into the pipework and then it stays into there. And if you've got a standpipe for your washing machine, exactly the same as I've got at home, then when you get some bad smell, when you get some a build-up of soap, it starts going bad, it starts drying out and starts smelling, and then that can then just start weeping out. There is a few different things you can do, but ultimately they do need to be open and vented. Otherwise, you're going to get creating airlocks and blockages that way through air not being able to be introduced to the back of the water to enable it to flow down a pipe. So we had an issue at our house over at Sean Towers over in Gillingham, and it turned out to be a backlog in quite a new washing machine at the time, a backlog of soap that blocked it up. So the manufacturer come out and basically just pointed this out to us and said, you need to do a service wash once a month. So on the first of every single calendar month, just to keep it nice and simple, we have written down on the calendar in the kitchen, do a service wash in the kitchen, on the washing machine. So all we do there is we turn it on to maximum temperature and our washing machine will go to 90 degrees and we turn that on with no soap, no clothes in it, and it'll just go through its service wash there. And it'll put loads and loads of hot water through the soap dispenser, through the machine, but ultimately it puts fresh water, which has got no soap in it from being added, through the discharge pipe, down into the standpipe, and then through the trap and back out. And where it is nice and hot, it's like 90 degrees coming out of the machine. As it's passing through, then that will then start breaking down the soap and then touching pens, as I've got here in the office, that then actually we've had no more smells and no more issues with the washing machine ever since. And I'm sure every manufacturer insists on the service wash to be done on their appliances, and no one ever does. So just have a look in your appliance manual, but I'm sure it does say that the maximum temperature will go, no soap, just the water, no clothes, and just let it do its thing. Do that once a month, and that'll reduce all the build-up of all the soap and the slime and all those bits and pieces that that do accumulate within the washing machine. So I've been on holiday. So we got on a cruise. It's actually a good value cruise. Actually, we didn't realise when we booked it up that it was actually in the Easter holidays, which ain't a problem. Yeah, we've got our kids are now grown up, but there was a lot of children on the boat, which is great to see, all running around and enjoying themselves. And we got on at Malta, and then we went up to three places up in Croatia and come back again. I've got some bits on my Facebook that's off the pictures of my holiday and stuff like that that I've shared out there. So I did a little tour of the backstage of the cruise ship, and then the final part of the tour, you go through different sections of the ship, and then the final tour, you're actually up at the bridge with the captain. And he was P&O. Who we sailed with is actually obviously an English company, so they have a lot of English crew there and officers, which is lovely to see. So a couple of facts that I've written down actually about the plumbing side of the cruise ship. So they budget and they allow 200 litres of water per person per day ought to be used on the cruise ship. What an absolute phenomenal amount of water. So that's from the toilet flushing to your drinking, brushing your teeth, your showering, and your use of the swimming pool as well, and the spas. And I just couldn't get over the amount of water, 200 litres each. And they say that the average person, when they get out of the swimming pool, will drag 3 litres of water out onto the side. Now, obviously, the very nature and design of swimming pools, it falls back in. But I just struggle to see that. But, you know, obviously they've got all their stats and facts and figures on water usage on these ships. And this comes from the chief engineer there. But, yeah, 200 litres of each per person per day. And what was really interesting as well, they were saying about how when we was on one of the destinations, they were putting on water from the shore and they were pumping it up onto the ship. And they were saying basically it's cheaper than trying to distill their own water from the sea, from a fuel point of view. So they've got massive, great big water tanks that they store the water. But if they need to, they can. So they were going through. So basically, it was very similar to what we was talking about a few episodes ago about on the air conditioning, on the HVAC side of things. So what they do is they've got the engines that are running. Now, the engines run and all they do is produce electricity. And then they produce electricity, a phenomenal amount, almost like a power station sort of type of capacity. And then that then drives the engines, which are electric. The propellers are electric. And obviously the whole ship runs electric. It doesn't have any gas on it at all. So all of the lighting, the fans, the cooking, everything just runs on off these generators that are directly fired. But one of the things they were saying that the engines actually run at a temperature of 84 degrees. So they get the 84 degree engine temperature, and the engines need to be cooled. So typically you'll have a radiator and a fan, that's sort of an idea, like in a car, and it just cools the engine down to get it to a set temperature. But what they do is they pump the water around the engine, and that comes out at 84 degrees. Now, if you want to try and boil seawater to try and use this as drinking water, you need to distill it. And the trouble being is that you've only got water that's at 84 degrees, and salt water will boil greater than 100 degrees, as we know. So what they do is they reduce the pressure, and I went into this on another episode about HVAC. They reduce the pressure, which actually reduces the boiling point of seawater down to 75 degrees by going through this system of reducing the pressure and bringing it into a negative environment, into a larger space. And when they do that, the water temperature boiling point drops down, and then they're able to boil off the water, and then the steam, or condensate as we call it within the industry, is actually pure water, and that's then taken off and then put into tanks, put through some UV lights just in case there's any last little bugs in there, and then that's good enough for drinking. So, but it uses obviously a bit of energy to come through. So on the shore, they were actually just bringing it straight in. They have different ways of using reverse osmosis and UV when they're actually starting to discharge water. So you have your black, you have your grey water, and your soil water that comes through, and that's held in different compartments. So your water that's from your hand basins and from your showers and stuff like that, that will then get put into a tank, and then that'll go through a filtration process, UV, and then discharge to the sea. It was something like 12 kilometres off land, doing a minimum of something like 10 knots of speed. So that's then discharged, and that's almost perfectly pure and clean water that's then dispersed into the sea and discharged as they're going along. That was proper interesting. So on the toilet side, now, if you've ever been on a cruise ship, it's exactly the same as an aeroplane. The whole toilet system is about 50 mil pipework. It's actually held under a vacuum. So this is around -3 to -4 bar of pressure, and there's a big pump back at the back in the bottom of the ship that goes into the tanks for all the soil waste, and it's holding it at a vacuum. And then what happens is, at your toilet area is like basically an air actuator, and it just opens up, creates the suction through the pipework, and it closes again. So exactly the same as the vacuum on the toilet of your aeroplane as well. So it doesn't matter if the toilets are up really high, down really low, this way, that way. It doesn't matter, because you've got this constant vacuum, and that helps pull the liquids and the solids and the paper all the way through to the pipework of the system as it comes through. And on that ship we had there, we've got 1 kilometre of toilet waste pipework that runs all the way through the heart of the ship. Now, obviously, what we normally have in our houses, we have pipes that go into a full position, so they're going downhill, so they've got gravity to naturally sort of pull it away. But we don't have that on a cruise ship. You know, it's all, the ceilings are a certain height. All the pipework runs best part flat. If you, you know, there's a bit of a list to the ship and it's leaning one way, you can't have all the toilets suddenly all spilling out because someone at the top end at the highest point has done a flush. So it's done on this massive vacuum system. So it's quite a loud flush out if you've ever experienced it, but it's perfectly fine and normal, and it's actually a really reliable bit of kit. And the most unreliable part are actually those little air actuators, which are actually on the back of the toilet. And so if you actually walk down the hallways of the cabins, when you actually look, there's all these hatches, and those hatches directly go onto the back of the plumbing for the toilet and for the bath. So if you do get a problem, they don't have to come into your room. They can actually do everything from the hallway. So yeah, I'm quite boring in that way when you see the maintenance guys working. So a little fact on the amount of sort of food they get through. And so in 7 days, they'll get through 2,700 dozen eggs, 640 kilos of baked beans, and 1,100 kilos of tomatoes. Now, I love all three of them, and a bit more on the old vegetable side as well. But actually phenomenal. You went through the kitchen and you saw all the preparation, certainly from a commercial catering point of view that we do here at Gaslek as well. It was actually really interesting, the amount of times they get through 13,000 bread rolls every day on that cruise ship. That's just that one cruise ship. And that's not that big either, that cruise. You had 3,100 guests on board. So you start looking at the Anthem and stuff, you're over 5,000 people on there. You know, it's a lot bigger, but it just seemed a quite small little bakery for such a big output. Obviously, these run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, these things. They never actually turn off these ovens. So it's proper impressive stuff, really, really impressive. So we've got the Gaslek podcast first birthday. So while I've been away, so we've been running up, so we've actually now got a new space. So I actually record this podcast, and this is going to be audio only. If you haven't realised, after 20 minutes, there's no video. This is actually an audio only podcast. I have the video part and all the stuff onto my desk in the office. And it takes up a bit of room. But as we've sort of come on, we're going to get a lot more professional with it all. And we've actually now got, we're going to set up a dedicated podcast space. We've actually got another unit that we're going to be operating out of. And part of that, we're going to dedicate to this podcast. And I'm really, really, really desperately trying to make sure we can get that ready for next week's first birthday. I'm a little bit apprehensive. We've got so much to do. I've got all my work. I've got to catch up on what's been happening, all the bits and pieces with the office team for when I was away. And then we've got this here, and we've got all the deliveries that I've been placing loads of orders over the bank holiday, so they're going to start flooding in over the next week as well. So got so much going on. And I really would like to be in that new little space for the Gaslick podcast first birthday. So I've got 7 days to try and get it all done and get everything sorted. So let's cross our fingers and to do that. So next week's episode, we'll be doing some little giveaways, and we'll be doing some little fun stuff as well. And I'm going to come up with some little jokes, and we'll have a little bit of a goof around for its first birthday. So I'm really excited for it. As you say, about 99% of podcasts don't actually make it this far. So it's actually quite an achievement that most people actually give up. But one thing, I don't give up. And, you know, if you never give up, you never fail. And that's something I heard a few months ago. And I love that little motto. So you only fail when you give up. So don't give up, you never fail. Okay then, guys, thank you very much indeed for listening. It's been, 21 minutes now. You have a fantastic week. It's a nice short week as well. We had Bank Holiday Monday yesterday, so we've only got a 4-day week to try and get as much as we can done. You take care, guys. Thank you very much indeed, and all the best. Goodbye.